Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Life Walk with Christ God. Sorry we didn't get to do this last week. We had some computer problems, so we're working that out. And, we'll go on from there. All right, there we go. I had to fix that real quick. Anyway, we've been talking about the tabernacle. God has been giving everyone the Spirit in order for them to do the precise work, artisan work, well-versed in their crafts, the dimensions and everything else. And, of course, we know Aaron had made the calf, and that incensed God. He was angry. So now the tabernacle is moved outside the camp. It seems to me we were on chapter 33. So that's where we're going to start, because that was 224, and then last week we didn't get to it. So I guess that's where we're at right now. So we're gonna leave it right there, and we're gonna move along here. But if we're repeating something, that's okay. We'll get back to it. Anyway, we're on King James, Exodus 33, chapter 33. The tabernacle is moved outside the camp, page 108. And the Lord said unto Moses, Depart, and go up thence, thou and the people, which thou hast brought out of the land of Egypt, unto the land which I swore unto Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, Unto thy seed I will give it. Understand now that the Israelites, I had something come up today, and I want to make this point. These are God's chosen people. Make no mistake about it. That is exactly what we're seeing here. God has heard their cries for 400 years and had Moses, who didn't want to even do this, if you remember, and was looking for every way out of this to keep from doing it. And God is going to do what God is going to do, whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not. Everything's going to be done on his time. Everything is going to be done with his wisdom, not with ours. We're just mere mortals. The bottom line is God is going to do it. One way or another, it's going to happen. So these are his people. He is giving them this land. It is going to be the Holy Land. So let's move on from there. And I will send an angel before thee, and I will drive out the Canaanite, and the Amorite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. For I will not go up in the midst of thee, for thou art a stiff-necked people, lest I consume thee along the way. And why is he saying this? Well, think about the behavior. They saw all the wonderful miracles and things, the wonders that Moses was doing them. The 10 different plagues that he had laid upon Pharaoh. And then they go over, they cross over the Red Sea. He parts the sea in front of them and everything else. And he's gone for 40 days talking with God. And they turn around and build what? A calf. And they talk Aaron into doing it. And this Aaron is chosen by God to be a priest. So, yes, they're a very stiff-necked people. We all are, and we are still to this day. We are stubborn, 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 and we're just intent on making the Lord angry. So let's go. Here we are, verse 4. And when the people heard these evil tidings, they mourned, and no man did put on him his ornaments. For the Lord had said unto Moses, Say unto the children of Israel, You're a stiff-necked people. Tell them. Let them know how I feel about them. I will come up into the midst of thee in a moment and consume thee. Therefore now, put off thy ornaments from thee, that I may know what to do unto thee. And the children of Israel stripped themselves of their ornaments by the Mount Horeb. And Moses took the tabernacle and pitched it without the camp, afar off from the congregation. And it came to pass that everyone which sought the Lord went out unto the tabernacle of the congregation, which was without the camp. So they had to go outside the camp to go to the tabernacle. God was angry. It's not going to be there. So my seat of judgment's not going to be there. My tabernacle's not going to be there. It's going to be outside the camp because I don't want to be near you right now. And rightfully so. Rightfully so. And it came to pass when Moses went out unto the tabernacle that all the people rose up and stood every man at his tent door and looked after Moses until he was gone into the tabernacle. And it came to pass, as Moses entered into the tabernacle, the cloudy pillar descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses. So this cloudy pillar, this plume of, whether you want to call it smoke or whatever, visible to them. God is interacting with Moses, and they know this, and yet they still are not obedient and following the covenants or anything else that God has established for them to do. And it's not that hard. We just don't do it. And we try to come up with moral reasons why we don't do it, our own thoughts, our own ways. And the problem with that is that we don't think like God. We can't think like him. His thinking is beyond our thinking. His understanding is beyond our understanding. But yet, we still try to rationalize everything. Good, bad, and different. That's what we do. We're humans. And all the people saw the cloudy pillar stand at the tabernacle door. And all the people rose up and worshiped every man in his tent door. And the Lord spoke unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto his friend. And he turned again unto the camp. But his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tabernacle. Joshua is going to be playing a big role here in the future, in Exodus here. And it's going to come to light as we go on further. So I'm sure a lot of this discussion and everything else that God is having with Moses, and Joshua is there and present, is going to be included. So we're going to have to wait and see. But it, you know, the other thing is, it's saying Moses is speaking to him face to face. Well, we know at the burning bush, it was the angel that spoke first and then God. And the bush was not consumed. And we know this. Just before, if you remember, before all of this, Jacob wrestled with an angel until morning. And the angel's like, hey, let me go. Not until you bless me. And then, of course, his name was changed from Jacob to Israel. So when it says face to face, it doesn't matter if it's an angel that comes down. He's sent down as a messenger from God. You are facing face to face. It's coming directly from God. So we have to understand this. And this pillar is God. There it is. Is he seeing his actual face and back? No, but he is talking directly. And the only thing that I can think of at this time too is the people were so scared, if you remember, when they said, don't approach the mountain. God said, don't approach or you will die. And they were in fear when he started to speak. No, don't talk to us. At least we die. You know, you talk and then tell us. You know, and it shows part of the stiff-neckedness too, because the problem is that they're trying to control things on their terms, not on God's terms. And that's what we do with our relationship today, is we're having a relationship with Christ, God, but are we having it on his terms or are we having it on our terms? You know, most of us, okay, we'll go to church. We'll pray, we'll feel good about it and everything else. Yeah, 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 you know, talk about it. That's great for an hour. And then you're like, I'm sorry, God, I've been busy all week. I've been working. I'm taking care of the kids. Got soccer practice and everything else. And we don't get back to them. And every day we need to take time just to spend time with the Lord. And that's what we need to do. And your life will be the better for it. I promise you. And I take that time anymore because I'm learning that. And I was so disappointed in myself going through and seeing this and then not realizing how just disobeying and disobedient I was to God until I started to take that time. And still, until I started to learn more and more and more. And the more I learned, the more I wanted to learn. And then I got excited about it. And now I get excited about it every day. So it's take that time. It is a relaxing, peaceful time. So we're going to move on. Here we go. And Moses said unto the Lord, see, thou sayest unto me, bring up his people. And thou hast not let me know whom thou sent with me. Yet thou hast said, I know thee by name, and thou hast also found grace in my sight. Now, therefore, I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, show me now thy way, that I may know thee, that I may find grace in thy sight, and consider that his nation is thy people. He wants to have it in mind. He wants to know more, which is wonderful. And he said, my presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest, peace, comfort. And he said unto him, if thy presence go not with me, carry us not up hence. For wherein shall it be known here that I and thy people have found grace in thy sight? It is not in that thou goest with us. So shall we be separated, I and thy people, from all the people that are upon the face of the earth? And the Lord said unto Moses, I will do this thing also that thou hast spoken, for thou hast found grace in my sight, and I know thee by name. And God knows us all. He knows our hearts. He knows our minds. He knows everything about us. And he is doing this. He's, you know, even though we're demanding, but at the same time, Moses is doing everything that he is asking. He's not perfect at it. And you're going to find he's going to mess up. But the bottom line is he's given the ordinances, the rules, the laws, the covenants, everything that we should be following. So here we go. And we're on verse 18, by the way. And he said, I beseech thee, show me thy glory. And he said, I will make all my goodness pass before thee, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before thee. And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. The statement there that God has made clear to us is, and again, I was talking about our thinking, what our rationale is, what we feel morals are and everything, especially in today's world. Oh, my goodness. With things so screwed up, confusion, everything else, just immoral things going on, is we're lucky that he's even giving us a second look. And the bottom line is he's making it clear. I will show mercy on who I will show mercy. I will be gracious, and I will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. I mean, you can't get any more direct than that. And he said, thou cannot see my face, for there shall no man see me and live. And there, he's naming it. See, when he's saying face-to-face, we're talking, you know, theology and poetic writing of it in a lot of ways, parallelisms, everything else. God is also making clear, nobody has really seen him. The only one that has really seen him in the Bible is Christ. And why? because God is in Christ and Christ is in God. So that one is answered. And we shall go on here. All right. And it shall come to pass when my glory passeth by that I will put thee in a cliff on the, in a cliff in the rock and will cover thy face with my hand while I pass. You'll see the backside of him, but you're not going to see his face. And he's putting his hand up over Moses, right like this, as he passes by. Because, why? Because if he sees them, you cannot see my face, for there shall no man see me and live. You'll die. So he's protecting him at the same time. And I will take away my hand, and thou shalt see my back parts, but my face shall not be seen. Very clear, very definitive. And again, this is exactly how it is. Understand, a lot of people, I don't know if you've been around people, and the first thing that they do, and we're on chapter 34 now, but the first thing they do is they say, well, I can't wait till I get to heaven. I have a lot of questions for God. No, you don't. No, you don't. Yeah, you'll be flat on your face, your hands up like this, and probably just begging to live, to even be in the presence of him. I can't even imagine. And having to have conversations with God, our creator. And back then, it happened a lot. Adam had that. And Moses had that. Enoch had that. I mean, so many had this. Today, we look for ways to listen. God, are you there? You know, be it whispers, nudges, you know, different ways that, and we are the ones that have to seek him. Okay? Yep. He's always been there. We're the ones who lost our way. So we have to seek him. We have to move on. And the Lord said unto Moses, hew three two tablets of stone unto like the first, and I will write upon these tablets the words that were in the first tablets, which thou breakest. And we did read this as I'm going around and going along with it. So we're gonna kind of skip down to there because I thought we did. And I thought we were on chapter 36, as a matter of fact. So we're going to move on up there because Moses returns from God. We already know that. The offerings and everything, the cunning wood, everything that was made, you know, cunning work and everything like that. So we were on the curtains, the boards. We did the golden candlesticks. So where did we get lost here? Because we did the garments of the priests. So I want to make sure. And I think that's where we were. We're going to start right here back. The altar of burnt offerings. I remember we did the golden candlestick and everything like that. So somehow or another, I kind of got lost in all of that. But this was, if you remember, where he had instructed them and gave them the Holy Ghost in order for them to understand how to make everything. You know, the bars of shittim wood, just everything. The vials, the Ark of the Covenant, the altar incense, and the table of showbread. So actually, I'm going to back up one. We'll go to chapter 37. And Bezalel made the ark of shittim wood, 2 cubits and a half, and was the length of it, and 1 cubit and a half the breadth of it, and 1 cubit and a half the height of it. And he overlaid it with pure gold within, within and without, and made a crown of gold to round about. And he cast it, 4 rings of gold to be set in the 4 corners of it, even 2 rings upon the one side of it, and 2 rings upon the other side of it. And he made staves of shittim wood, and overlaid them with gold. And he put the staves into the rings by the sides of the ark to bear the ark. And he made the mercy seat of pure gold, two cherubims, and a half was the length thereof, and one cubit and a half the breadth thereof. And he made two cherubims of gold, beaten out of one piece he made them, on the two ends of the mercy seat. One cherub on the end this side, and another cherub on the end on that side, out of the mercy seat. He made the cherubims on the two ends thereof. And the cherubims spread out their wings on high and covered with their wings over the mercy seat, with their faces to one another, even to the mercy seatward, were the faces of the cherubims. This is God's seat, his judging seat, his seat of mercy. And you notice this. This is exactly what this is. It is the seat of mercy. God has been merciful. He has been gracious. He has been loving. He has been kind the whole way through when they didn't deserve it. We don't deserve it. So understand something. Never one time is he calling it anything else really than the mercy seat. And that's the beautiful, his judgment mercy seat. And here we go. And he made the table of shittim wood. Two cubits was the length thereof, and a cubit the breadth thereof, and a cubit and a half the height thereof. And he overlaid it with pure gold, and made thereunto a crown of gold round about. Also he made thereunto a border of a handbreadth round about, and he made a crown of gold for the border thereof round about. And he cast it four rings of gold, and put the rings upon the four corners that were in the 4 feet thereof. Over against the border were the rings, the places for the staves to bear the table. And he made the staves of shittim wood and overlaid them with gold to bear the table. Let's make sure we get this here. And he made the vessels which were upon the table, his dishes, his spoons, his bowls, and his covers to cover, withal of pure gold. And he made the candlestick of gold, of beaten work. He made the candlestick, his shaft and his branch and his bowls and his knops and the flowers were of the same. And six branches going out of the sides thereof, three branches of the candlestick out of one side thereof, and three branches of the candlestick out of the other side thereof. Three bowls were made after the fashion of the almonds in one branch, a knop in the flower, and three bowls made like almonds in another branch, a knop in the flower. So throughout the six branches going out of the candlestick, which is really cool. Almond blossoms and stuff like, oh man. And in the candlestick were four bowls made like almonds, knops in the flowers, and a knop under the two branches of the same, and a knop under the two branches the same, and a knop under two branches of the same, according to the six branches going out of it. Their knops and their branches were the same, and it was one beaten work of pure gold. So you can imagine the size of this and the craftsmanship, the cunning artistry, the work that God has given them instructions on how to do. They didn't know how to do it. It came from God. Those instructions, though very explicit, very detailed, precise, perfect. And God gave them this knowledge to make sure it was done perfectly, because he is perfect, and that is God. So here we go. And he made his seven lamps and his sniffers and oh boy, snud dishes of pure gold. Of a talent of pure gold he made it, and all the vessels thereof. And he made the incense altar of shittim wood, and the length of it was a cubit, and a breadth of it a cubit. It was four square. Two cubits was the height of it. The horns thereof were the same. And he overlaid it with pure gold, both the top of it and the sides thereof round about, and the horns of it. He also made unto it a crown of gold round about, and he made two rings of gold for it under the crown thereof by the two corners of it upon the two sides thereof to be the places for the staves to bear it withal. And he made the staves of shittim wood and overlaid them with gold. And he made the holy anointing oil and the pure incense of sweet spices according to the work of the apothecary. And he made the altar a burnt offering of shittim wood. 5 cubits was the length thereof, and 5 cubits the breadth thereof. And it was 4 square, and 3 cubits the height thereof. And he made the horns thereof on the 4 corners of it. The horns thereof were the same, and he overlaid it with brass. And he made all the vessels of the altars, the pots and the shovels and the basins and the fresh hooks and the fire pans, all the vessels thereof he made of brass. And he made for the altar a brazen gate of network under the compass thereof beneath unto the midst of it. So basically on the ledger of it anyway, I want to make sure I read it right. Oh, and he cast 4 rings for the 4 ends of the grate of brass to be the places for the staves. And he made the staves of shittim wood and overlaid them with brass. And he put the staves into the rings on the sides of the altar to bear it withal. He made the altar hollow with boards. And he made the layer of brass and the foot of it brass and the looking glass of the women assembling, which assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And he made the court on the south side, southward. The hangings of the court were of fine twined linen, 100 cubits. Their pillars were 20, and their brazen sockets 20, and the hooks of the pillars and the fillets were of silver. And for the north side of the hangings were 100 cubits. Their pillars were 20, and their sockets of brass 20, the hooks and the pillars of their fillets of silver. And for the west side were hangings of 50 cubits, and their pillars 10, and their sockets 10, the hooks of the pillars and their fillets of silver. And for the east side, eastward, 50 cubits, the hangings of the side of the gate were 15 cubits, their pillars 3 and their sockets 3. And for the other side of the court gate, on this hand and on that hand, were hangings of 15 cubits, their pillars 3 and their sockets 3. All the hangings of the court round about were of fine twined linen, and the sockets and the pillars of brass and the hooks of the pillars and their 15 fillets of silver and the overlaying of their of their chapters of silver and all the pillars of the court were filleted with silver. So it's branded, everything is very precise. And he's done it exactly just perfectly. And the hanging of the gate of the court was needlework of blue and purple and scarlet and a fine twine linen. And then the breadth was 5 cubits, answerable to the hangings of the court. And the pillars were 4, and their sockets of brass 4, and their hooks of silver, and the overlaying of their chapiters and their fillets of silver. And all the pins of the tabernacle and the court round about were of brass. So that's the bends and everything, and I'm guessing. And this is the sum of the tabernacle of testimony as it was counted according to the commandment of Moses for the service of the Levites by the hand of Ithamar, son to Aaron the priest, and Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, made all that the Lord commanded Moses. And with him was Aholiab, the son of Azamak of the tribe of Dan, an engraver and a cunning workman and an embroiderer in blue and in purple and in scarlet and in fine linen. All the gold was occupied for the work, and all the work of the holy place, even the gold of the offering, was 29 talents. And the 730 shekels after the shekel of the sanctuary, and the silver of them were numbered of the congregation was 100 talents and 1,703 shekels after the shekel of the sanctuary. Abakar, for every man that is, half a shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary, for every one that went to be numbered from 20 years old upward, for 600,000 and 300,000 and 550 men. And of the 100 talents of silver were cast the sockets of the sanctuary and the sockets of the veil. 100 sockets of 100 talents, a talent for a socket. And of the 7,170 and 5 shekels, he made hooks for the pillars and overlaid them with chapiters and filleted them. And the brass of the offering was 70 talents and 2,400 shekels. And wherewith he made the sockets to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation and the brazen altar and the brazen grate for it, and all the vessels of the altar, and the sockets of the court round about, and the sockets of the court gate, and all the pins of the tabernacle, and all the pins of the court round about. So now we're going to get into, and this is everything for the tabernacle that has been measured, it's been done, it's been weighed, it's given you precise accuracy so that you could kind of have a picture in your mind of how big this is. And it is, it's big, it's not small. And gold and silver in that kind of quantity weighs an extreme amount. So carrying it with the staves around and everything, this is a task. But this is exactly what's going to happen. Take it up, put it down. Take it up, put it down. Wherever God goes, that's where they're going. So now we're going to get into the garments of the priests. And of the blue and the purple and the scarlet, they made clothes of service to do service in the holy place, and made the holy garments for Aaron as the Lord commanded Moses. And he made the ephod of gold, blue, and purple, and scarlet, and fine twine linen. And they did beat the gold into thin plates and cut it into wires to work in the blue and in the purple and in the scarlet and in the fine linen with cunning work. Again, there's that word again, cunning work, which is, it's like artistry, impeccable. It's just incredible. That's all there is to it. And they made the shoulder pieces for it to couple together. By two edges was the coupled together. And the curious girdle of his ephod, what that was upon it, was the same, according to the work thereof, of gold, blue, and purple, and scarlet, and fine twine linen, as the Lord commanded Moses. And they wrought onyx stones enclosed in the ouches of gold, graven as signets are graven, the names of the children of Israel. So we've got the 12 tribes. So you could see exactly, this is his people. Again, he's claiming them. He's making sure they're claimed. He's got the priest. He's doing everything, the garments for the priests and everything. And he put them on the shoulders of the ephod, that they should be stones for a memorial for the children of Israel, as the Lord commanded Moses. And he made the breastplate of cunning work, like the work of an ephod of gold, blue and purple and scarlet and fine twine linen. It was 4 square that they had made the breastplate double. A span was a length thereof, and a span the breadth thereof being doubled. And they set it in four rows of stone. The first row was sardius, a topaz, and a carbuncle, and it was the first row. The second row was an emerald, a sapphire, and a diamond. And the third row was a ligure, and an agate, and an amethyst. And the fourth row, a beryl, and an onyx, and a jasper. They were enclosed in the ouches of the gold in their enclosings. So in their settings, and I could see them being like bezel set in there, is what I am guessing. And they're beaten around with gold to hold them in. And they made upon the breastplate chains at the ends of wreathen work of pure gold. And they made two ouches of gold and two gold rings, and put the two rings in the two ends of the breastplate in the settings. And they put the two wreathen chains of gold in the two rings on the ends of the breastplate. And the two ends of the wreathen chains they fastened in two ouches and put them in the shoulder pieces of the ephod before it. And they made two rings of gold and put them on the two ends of the breastplate upon the border of it, which was on the side of the ephod inward. And they made two other golden rings and put them on the two sides of the ephod underneath toward the fore part of it, over the other coupling thereof above the curious girdle of the ephod. And they did bind the breastplate by his rings unto the rings of the ephod with the lance of blue, that it might be above the curious girdle of the ephod, and that the breastplate might not be loosed from the ephod, as the Lord commanded Moses. And he made the robe of the ephod of woven work, all of blue. And there was a hole in the midst of the robe, as the hole of a habergeon, with a band round about the hole, that it should not rend. And they made upon the hems of the robe pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet, and twined linen. And they made bells of pure gold, and put the bells between the pomegranates upon the hem of the robe, round about between the pomegranates, a bell and a pomegranate, a bell and a pomegranate, round the hem of the robe to minister in. And the Lord commanded, as the Lord commanded Moses. And they made coats of linen of woven work for Aaron and for his sons, and a mitre of fine linen, and godly bonnets of fine linen, and linen breeches of fine twined linen, and a girdle of fine twined linen, and blue and purple and scarlet of needlework, as the Lord commanded Moses. And they made a plate of the holy crown of pure gold, and wrote upon it the writing like to the engraving of a signet, holiness to the Lord. And they tied it unto a lace of blue and fastened it on the high upon the mitre, as the Lord commanded Moses. Holiness to the Lord. Again, these are my people. I am your God. It's very clear. And everything that has to do, their garments, the priests, everything that's going to minister unto the Lord and get their instructions and everything else, holiness to the Lord. These are the most holy things, the most holy area, the most, it's God. Okay, so we're going to notice that going throughout the Bible, there's a couple things that I noticed as I've been reading and reading and reading is, you're going to see the souls, remember when Moses stood and it said, take your sandals off, for the place where you stand is holy. And we're going to see that a lot, and the washing of feet, the doing this and that, we're going to see that in the New Testament. The thing is that is a parallelism, I think, of how we're supposed to live life, walking in God. Okay, it is one of the most holy things to do. So holiness to the Lord. I love how this comes out, and how it plays out. It's really cool. This shows, you know, I mean, could you imagine just being there? Oh, thus all the work of the tabernacle of the tent of the congregation finished, and the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So did they. And they brought the tabernacle unto Moses, the tent and all the furniture, his tacks, his boards, his bars, and his pillars and his sockets. And the covering of ram skins dyed red, and the covering of badger skins, and the veil of the covering, the ark of the testimony, and the staves thereof, and the mercy seat. And there it is again, the mercy seat. And the table and all the vessels thereof, the showbread, the pure candlestick with the lamps thereof, with the lamps to be set in order, and all the vessels thereof, and the oil for the light, and the golden altar, and the anointing oil, the sweet incense, and the hanging for the tabernacle door, the brazen altar, the grate of brass, his staves, and all his vessels, the laver and his foot, the hangings of the court, his pillars and his sockets, and the hanging for the court, gate for the cords, and his pins, and all the vessels of the service of the tabernacle for the tent of the congregation, the clothes of service to do service in the holy place, and the holy garments for Aaron the priest and his son's garments to minister in the priest's office, according to all the Lord commanded Moses. So the children of Israel made all the work. And Moses did look upon all the work, and behold, they had done it as the Lord had commanded. Even so, they done it, and Moses blessed them. It's very impressive, because when Moses sees, you know, Moses gives them the command, but understand, God gave them the knowledge on how to do it. And that's what is just wow. So now we are moving into, wow, time is flying. We are moving into Leviticus here. As soon as I get this page, there we go. And we're at the burnt offering, chapter 1. But I want you to get a picture of all this that's going on, the mercy seat, the ark of the covenant, and the cherubims coming up in their wings, you know, touching right there. That's God's seat. That's his holy place. And it's going to be important as we move along, especially with Joshua, when we start to get into Joshua, when he's dealing with Jericho and the wall. It's going to be very impressive, because he's got to lead them over the Jordan. He's got to take them and lead them into the new land. So it's going to be very important. And that's why he is also with that conversation that they're having outside of the camp when Moses was there speaking with the Lord. All this is being played out and set just as God is doing. It is going to be perfect. Human beings, we have no clue of how God works. We're never going to understand how God works. What we can tell you, and what I can tell you is that God is alive and well today. I can tell you that Christ is he is our bridge. He closes the gap for us, and so that we are able to get near to God. So, but everything that he does, there's no way we could possibly understand it. If you really understood the power and how just being the creator of every single thing, there's nothing he did not create in the entire universe, this entire realm, everything. God's hand did it. And it's just incredible to me. And yet we still do what we do. We still find a way to sin. We still sin. We really are just a sad disappointment for the Lord. And we just have to do better. And we have to keep trying. And we have to keep asking for forgiveness. And that is the free will that is upon us. So, but anyway, we are going to get in. Here we go. Now we are out of Exodus and we are into Leviticus. another wonderful, great book. And you're going to love this book. It's really cool. And, man, I'm excited so that we can talk about that later. But I think for this week, we're gonna hedge off here. And just remember, we're going to be on page 122, chapter 1, the burnt offering. And somehow or another, I kind of got lost. But I'm going to make sure I don't this time. So, and I apologize last week, guys. I've had one of these very trying and frustrating months. So, but that's okay. You know, that's the testing that God gives us brings us perseverance, patience. It teaches us how to be more full of wisdom and understanding and compassionate. And this has been kind of a week. And we think of our problems as these great, huge problems. But at the same time, you know, it's been one thing after another after another. So, but these are little things. They're not by any means big things. Refrigerator went out. But you know what? God put us into a position to where we could get another refrigerator. How blessed is that? You know, then had to get a set of tires for the car. Again, had us in a position to where we could do that. We were able to close in the yard and put up a new fence. God took care of that. And I mean, so for every step that we make, and of course, I've got one of my friends down the road that I'm helping him, he's helping me redo the house and everything. We have all the pipes replaced and everything. Expensive, but again, his knowledge and everything like that. We bought the parts. We did everything together. God is great. And the miracles are never ending. And that's what I love. So when we deal with that, whether we deal with sickness, whether we deal with the good things, understand, God doesn't punish us. He doesn't tempt us. Okay, God can't tempt. He's not going to tempt us. Evil tempts us. God has no evil in him, so it is impossible for God to tempt us. Will he test us? Yes. And you know what? Rightfully so. I mean, I think he should test us. And that's to make sure that we are worthy of being able to have a wonderful eternal life with him. So don't get caught up in all the worldly things here and all the nonsense that goes on, especially in today's world. Boy, there's plenty of it, be it political, be it these immoral things that are going on. You know, you just try to look past that. Be blessed for what you have. Learn to be content with what you have and what you don't have. You're going to find out in life. You're going to know what it's like to be hungry. You're going to know what it's like to be full. You're going to know what it's like to be sad, happy. I mean, it's just part of life. Everybody deals with issues, problems, and everything else. I promise you they do. Okay? What God gives you is how you handle that stuff. And it's taken me all these years. And I still deal with a lot of the problems. But hopefully a little bit more gracefully and you know, God has shown me a lot of mercy and given me grace. So, you know, you try to learn and you try to keep going forward. Keep that in mind and be kind to one another. So the world's got enough problems of its own. There's no question about that. But if you just take, I don't care if it's 5 minutes. I don't care if it's 2 minutes. Take a little time with God in the morning. Take a little time with God at night. Your life is not that busy. It is not. Okay? We make it that busy. What you need to do is say, this is time that I need to spend with God. After all, your life here, the way you have, the way you live and everything else, you won't be here without him. He's the one that controls that. He controls it all. and you don't have 5 minutes for them, 10 minutes a day? Really? Why? Have the relationship on his terms, not yours. And that's a hard thing to do. And I tell everyone, you know, you decide you're going to follow God and Christ and everything like that. Really? Man, that's not an easy thing. Matter of fact, that is going to be so hard to do. I mean, you're really in for it. But I promise you, the more commitment you have to it and the more you just stay with it, the better you're going to be and the better life will be. So you'll learn to enjoy things and find peace. And with that, I'm going to let you guys go. Again, I apologize last week. Computer fans last week. So, and now I've been running the computer nonstop for probably about 2 years. So now I've got the CPU fan going out, but I've already ordered one. So right now, I was thankful it didn't go out with me tonight. But we'll see you next week. And like I said, be good. Okay? What do you got to lose? Spend some time with God. He's our Lord and our Savior, our one and only God. And that's it. He's our King. So serve Him. Give Him glory. Give Him praise. And tell Him you love Him because He loves us. With that, I'll see you later.